to the Beauty Files today. I'm Juanita, and I'm so glad you could join us today. Well, it happened. The Mayans said that today would be the last day on Earth. Well, funny thing is that we are still here. You're able to hear this show. That's more important. So I'm just going to put that out there for selfish reasons. The Mayan calendar was wrong. You're here listening to the show, and hopefully this is not our last time here. So I thank you for keeping us on the air and to get the juice for today. Let me first say that we had scheduled today Chef Richard Johnson, who was supposed to be a guest today, but he received a last-minute pullout due to an important catering gig. Okay, got that message about 30 minutes ago, so it must have been a really important gig for him to had to pull out, so we'll get him another time. In any event, I am so thrilled and pleased to have Dr. Jennifer Baumgardner on the show, and later on the show we have Kara Allen. Now, some of you have asked if she, Kara, could be come back on the show, so she'll be joining us later to talk about why we are still looking crazy at those holiday parties, especially when you know the lights come on, and yes, you will see your boss, your coworkers, and your associates who have Facebooked you, Twittered you, and Instagrammed you on how crazy you look. I'm just saying. So without further ado, Dr. Jennifer Baumgardner, who wrote a book, it's called You Are What You Wear, What Your Clothes Reveal About You. Welcome to the Beauty Files, Dr. Baumgardner.
Thank you for having me, Juanita. I'm glad to be here.
Dr. Baumgardner just had a baby girl. We were talking about her earlier before we got on air, and I was congratulating her because I do so love baby girls. So, again, congratulations on the air to a wonderful baby girl.
Thank you so much.
And let's get right to the book, the juice of this show. Why did you decide to write this book? It's a very good book, by the way. I have not been able to put it down. I have little sticky notes all in this book on all the little things that you touch on. But why this book?
Well, I've always felt that, you know, our clothing says so much more than just what we wear. I think it can really help us figure out the deeper internal stuff. And this has always been something that I've believed. And then while I was working in retail, that idea, you know, became stronger for me that I said, yes, there is something there. And then when I was training to become a psychologist, it really kind of was concrete for me that this is something that most people don't think about. But our wardrobe is such an interesting indicator about, you know, how we think, how we feel, our emotions, losses, things like that. So I wanted to put it down on paper. And while I was writing my dissertation, I was kind of bored with that. I was taking some time out and going back and forth writing the dissertation and then just writing these ideas down on paper because I felt that a lot of clients that I had started working with wanted those ideas. And it really just came out of that. And I started blogging for Psychology Today, and I mentioned that I was working on a book, and I was lucky enough to get contacted by a publishing company that wanted to really have me put this down and hopefully use it almost like an instructional guide for other people. And that's really what I hope it is. It's really an instructional guide to help people look a little deeper into what they're wearing and hopefully help them from the inside out. So
you're basically saying that there's a psychological related issue when we shop for clothes, because, you know, do we shop for personal reasons? Do we shop for personal struggles, personal fears?
All of the above. There are actually three components I talk about with the psychology of dress. And, of course, the dressing crazy at an office party, it sounds like it's one of them. But there are three parts. There's the shopping and how we shop and why we shop. There's the actual assembling of the ensemble, which is how we put our clothes together. And then the other one is going to be how we store and organize our clothes. So if you look at all those three types of behaviors, often they're motivated by something internal. So, you know, we talk about sleep behavior and eating behavior and dating behavior, mm-hmm. and we talk about the internal reason, and we find that it's legitimate because it's not something as frivolous as shopping or dressing. But I think that we're doing a disservice by not looking at shopping and dressing and storing and organizing clothes as something that is just as valid as any other behavior. So that's why I kind of wanted to go into that a little deeper and acknowledge that there is something there, and that to ignore it, I think we're eliminating some really interesting insight into how we tick.
Oh my God. I didn't realize that because, I look at how some people are very meticulous about, how things are placed, how things are put on their bodies. Then I look at other people that look like they've never owned an iron in their life and they don't care. It doesn't matter that I'm wrinkled. I'm looking like I just pulled this out of the hamper, which some people probably have done.
Yeah.
Shake it out, spray it, and put it on. Where you have others who have gone to the point of, if that crease is not precisely the way it's supposed to be, they're very anal about that.
Right. And I think that, obviously there are some people that just dress the way they like to dress, and you don't need to go into an analysis about it. But I find that 99.9% of the time, the way people dress, how they do all these behaviors, really is just a very small microcosm for larger areas in their life. So the person that is very meticulous in the detail of the way they're dressing, they might do so because they do that in all things in their life. And the closet is just a small piece of that. Or it could be that, their life is in total chaos. And the closet is the one place where they can find order and find some kind of perfection that they can't find outside of the life. So there are a lot of different individual reasons for why we do what we do. And I think that it's really fascinating to see, okay, well, what is it? How are you ticking? What makes you do certain things in your wardrobe? And how could you learn about yourself? And then how could you look at your larger life and see what you're doing there and if there's a pattern there? And then how can you change it, both the wardrobe and the life as a whole, to make everything better? So that's kind of how I use the wardrobe. It's just really a tool, it's kind of a safe way to look at the deeper stuff.
So what are some of the mistakes that we make regarding our wardrobes?
I try to say they're not mistakes. They're only mistakes. Really, it's those choices that are motivated by health and non-health. So, for instance, if if you're 100 years old and you're wearing a micro mini skirt and a tube top, someone might say, wow, you're making a major fashion mistake. But if you love the way you look and you feel great doing it, why the heck not?
Right.
Do it.
Okay.
You may not look your best, but you're doing it because you feel good about yourself, you're rocking your body, you enjoy the way you look, and this is a choice made in health. So that's something that I won't get into. If you're doing it because you feel like you hate your age, you feel like you're no longer current, so you have to fight against it, and all the kind of horrible misunderstandings about age in our culture, then that's a choice made without, it's an unhealthy motivation. So that's where I would jump in and make a change. So the mistakes are really less mistakes, but more what is motivated by health and what is motivated by not health, by resisting something or hiding something. And there are tons of different types of things that people do, just looking at the different types of shopping behavior. So, one big one, especially around the holidays, is like the over-shopping.
Right.
I might be over-shopping to, hide financial issues. I might be over-shopping to numb pain, feel even better, create something, an illusion that's not there. So there's the kind of over shopping. The other one is never giving anything away. We see that with like our shows, how popular like hoarding behaviors are.
Yes.
And granted, those are really extreme clinical cases, but there are non-clinical hoarding behaviors that, I wouldn't necessarily slap a diagnosis on someone as I would as a psychologist, but, they're bordering on that. And that's just people who have infused their stuff with the spirit of a memory or their best time or unfinished business. And then there's also, when we look at assembling, it's how either people are totally terrified of making a mistake, so they are very kind of exact in the way they come up with an outfit. They don't take creative license. They wear bland colors, or they're over the top. They show too much, too little. They dress too young or too old. And then with storing and organizing, it's either, total chaos or it's meticulous. And also, obviously, with storing and organizing, it's like never giving anything away. The space just looks like complete, chaos, and they've had clothes from, 1975.
I was going to ask you that. You have a chapter here that, or a paragraph here or whatever that says why we keep stuff.
Right.
And
there are many reasons. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I see one says it is difficult to give away something that you might need one day. I think I may be that person. I think I may need that sequence 1970s god-awful jacket that I can't even put my arm in. I think I may need that.
A lot of people, and this is not just with, keeping behaviors and really clinically based hoarding behaviors, it's often an inability to make a decision. So one, they may need it one day, a lack of resource. They have spent money on it, so they don't want to give it away because it's seen as a waste behavior.
Right.
Another one is going to be they've held on to it because it has a memory attached to it. You know, our stuff is just stuff. We only have meaning with it when we attach meaning to it. Therefore, we can also detach that meaning and give it away. So that happens all the time. The other one is just, you know, they feel like they can never find it again. On the other one is just indecision.
Or it's going to come back again, back in fashion.
Right. Yep. Or they don't know what to do with it. So they have all this stuff in their closet. They're totally overwhelmed, and rather than making a decision, you know, it goes in the giveaway bin or it stays here, they're overwhelmed by it, so they don't do anything. It's kind of like a procrastination. So all those things happen. They're all very common and normal, and, you know, many people have them. And that's why when you look at kind of the history of housing markets and storage spaces, our houses have gotten larger, but our stuff hasn't gotten less. And we're using, even with our houses getting larger and our cars getting larger and used as, you know, storage facilities, we're adding on storage facilities to those things. So what does that teach us? It teaches us that we're getting more and more stuff and we don't know how to get rid of it. So that's kind of in a larger life. But in the closet, we do the exact same thing, you know. When we store our shoes in our ovens that we don't use and things like that.
come in the back door so our husbands or our significant others don't see us shopping again and trying to hide stuff underneath the bed and things.
Right. And if you're hiding stuff, you know, if you do the hiding behaviors, that's indicative that there's something wrong there. That's probably not, you know, why are you hiding it? And also, you know, the biggest thing is triggers. What is triggering you? What is bringing you to the store to maybe buy things that you don't need, and then you keep them in your closet and you never use them?
That is so cool. I don't understand. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I never thought of it that way. There is a reason why you have to go to the store, buy an item, put it in the closet, never take the tag off, see it every day, and it doesn't bother you.
Right. Yeah, or you don't even know that it's there. Actually, there's a really great show out called My Shopping Addiction, which I love, and I watch it all the time.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Isn't it great? And one of the things they did with this psychologist did a great exercise where he brought a client to a store and put her items in the store that she already owned. And she was picking out her own items and had no idea that it was hers. And she had them. And I just think that was just the most fascinating thing, you know. And we do that maybe on a smaller scale where we have things in our closet and we buy the same type of thing over and over. I have like a weakness for cream-colored sweaters. Don't ask me why, but I'll just buy cream-colored sweaters over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I have them, and I can't justify it. But, you know, looking at what you already have in your closet and how you can make do with that and seeing, you know, and really kind of teasing out your needs versus your wants, especially during this time of year and also in this economy, you know. So, and so you don't have a larger impact of credit card debt and spousal, you know, fights and things like that. Just teasing those wants and needs out, and then also looking at your triggers. What is happening right before you go out and shop, and how do you feel during, and then how do you feel right after?
That's a great idea.
Yep, you're triggered by some negative emotion. Usually, when you shop, you're kind of in a zone where you don't even know what's going on. Your heart is racing.
Yeah.
And after, you might feel the crash and the guilt. So, just looking at those behaviors and seeing if you have any of those.
You know, that's interesting because I used to stopped using this site. I guess I could say it's eBay. I love eBay, but I was getting addicted to the bidding, and I would sit there. I mean, 1 o'clock in the morning, trying to outbid someone, and then you wait till like 8 seconds. You go, bam! You get the thing. So, and then when you won, you just you feel this rush of whatever, and then it just like, okay, I got that item.
Well, is that not the thrill of the hunt? I mean, is that not what we must have felt like way back in the day when we were hunting prey?
Exactly.
I have to make a confession on the air. I did an eBay bid last night, and I was like, you get in a cold sweats, and you're like biting your nails, and you're like, I gotta have this.
I know.
And the fact that you're competing with someone else makes it more likely that you need it more. You know, you convince yourself because someone else wants it, and it's like a lack of a resource. And we do that with other things, not just our stuff. We do that with food and causes and things like that. When we have a competitor, the item becomes more and more attractive. So eBay is set up to do that for us. But guilty as charged. I did that last night, and I was like, God, I am crazy.
If someone wants to...
I need to calm down.
Well, in your book on chapter 4, you have a chapter, it's called Body of Work. And one of the paragraphs I want to read to our audience, it says, if you are using clothing just to cover up your body, not only are you hiding your body, but you're hiding from yourself. Whether you are running from shame about being overweight, feeling excessively embarrassed about your post-pregnancy bump, or simply rejecting the body of the now, your inner demons will always find you. That is so, yeah, on point. Because I had to go someplace yesterday on a shoot, and I hadn't seen someone in a while. I was trying to find the spankiest spank to put on just so I can hide the weight that I had gained.
Right.
And then I'm trying to find something big, something. Then I got into this weird thing where I wanted to keep my coat on all day while I was working. And I'm sitting there going, this coat is hot, I'm sweating, but yet I want to keep the coat on because I don't want everybody to see my big butt.
Right. And I think that, you know, there has to be some part of us, and sometimes we call it in therapy, when I work as a psychologist, it's like the internalized therapist. There has to be something in us that loves us unconditionally that allows us to be free of that, where you don't have to wear Spanx. You don't have to look perfect. You don't have to cover up. That you can just wear what you like and feel good with the bumps and lumps, and allow it to be there and love yourself regardless of that. And
but that would be great, doctor. That would be great, doctor, if we didn't have covers of magazines or several magazines that,
right,
you know, borderline anorexic-looking women,
right,
or yeah, even if a woman does have a curve or shape, that they've been photoshopped to make them look smaller.
Right. And it's unfortunate we live in a time and place where what is supposed to be beautiful is often unrealistic and it's created. And so we're bombarded with these things that we can never achieve. And I think the biggest thing that I've just found in my own personal life is disassociating from it. So, you know, I lived in California in a very wonderful, beautiful area with a high,
yeah,
rate of plastic surgery. Okay.
Oh,
so
my.
I I'm looking around at all these women. I'm like, wow, I look nothing like that. Now I have two choices. I can either feel like crap about myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Which certainly,
yeah,
happens. But then I have to come to a point where I'm like, that's not real. I do not look like that. I have to look at myself in the mirror and say, this is who I am, and accept it and love it and disassociate from what is not real. And that was just my own experience. And that I have to do whether I'm looking at a magazine or a TV show or, you know, a person who's standing right in front of me. You have to get to a point where you can look at these images that are crafted,
yeah,
and know that they're not real, that they are often, you know, set up and they are false. And we cannot kind of hook into that and make that our standard of beauty.
Right.
And we have to kind of push away from that a little bit. And sometimes it may mean that you take a media diet, turning off the TV, putting away the magazine, until you can look critically at these images and know that they are crafted. But
right,
it's hard to do. And again, in addition to kind of putting yourself on a media diet, knowing that it's not real, also having something in you that accepts you because you don't look like that and that you're enough. In that, you know, you're enough as you are. But again, that takes a lot of effort and time, but it is possible. But
does,
yeah,
it take effort and time on your part? Does it take effort and time on your part, or the part of people around you, or both? Or does it even really matter what the other people around you are saying?
I think it has to come from you. You know, because there's always going to be people that may not think that you're the ideal, or that may kind of buy into the image that is pushed out there that we're supposed to look like. But, you know, and that can happen whether it's just your own work, or it can happen, you know, in therapy when you're working with someone who is teaching you how to do that. It's very hard to do, but eventually you do have to come to a point when it's okay that you don't look a certain way and you don't,
yeah,
need to.
Right.
And you truly can look at yourself and think that you look good just the way you are, and you don't have to work against it. I think it's a hard thing to do, and I think it's definitely a goal that all of us can have. And I think we go back and forth. You know, sometimes we look at ourselves and we hate what we see, and other times,
yeah,
we finally like to say, oh, forget it. You know, this is what I look like. I'm going to, you know, I would get over it and move forward. But I think that we can eventually achieve that, and I hope that we can. I also hope that we can look at the media with a critical eye, and know that that's not what we need to look like in order to be beautiful. And, you know, just also knowing I can walk down the street and survey 100 people, and what they think is beautiful is all different. So
yeah.
Why can't we look different from what we're told we're supposed to look like,
exactly,
and still be beautiful if the standards are not standardized, right?
Right. And another question, you know, that I wanted to, you know, just throw out there, what are we constantly chasing designer labels?
I think some of us are and some of us aren't. I think, you know, sometimes people love designer labels because it's really like an art form. They collect it like they would a painting, you know,
right,
of a certain artist. I think others will buy into it because of the associations with the brand. So
right,
a brand is not just a brand anymore. It's really a lifestyle that you buy into. And it's really fascinating to look at how brands are developed. And most brands are not just doing fashion, they're doing all types of life. So the kitchen, you know, the travel, things like that. And so when we are become obsessed with the brand, it's really the life and the associations that the brand has developed, so that when we wear this brand, we must be like X, Y, and Z,
mm-hmm,
right? So
right,
we pick the brand based on what we want to project. These are people who are really kind of using the brand in that way. Some people
yeah,
just really like it, as I said. Others, they buy it because of the associations, that if I wear this, then that must mean I am all these things that are associated with the brand.
Right.
And then the other thing is, too, that because many brands are expensive and exclusive, if we buy them, that
then
must
that means
mean
that
we are also,
yeah,
right, we're successful. And, you know, unfortunately, we often measure other types of success with financial success. So a lot of people will get expensive items, wear them, and say, well, if I'm wearing this expensive item, it must mean that I'm financially successful, which in our society also means I'm successful in other ways. So that's
yeah,
sometimes why people will wear the brands. And they don't even necessarily like it. If I took the label off, they wouldn't necessarily buy the item. And that's kind of the true test, if you're doing that or not. If the label weren't there, or it were made by another designer, would you still buy it? And if
right,
you wouldn't, then there's something going on, and you want to figure out, okay, what am I really lacking here, and what do I think I'm lacking, and how am I trying to fill this gap with this brand and the associations with it?
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, do you think people are now starting to live beyond their means with that? And you just answered the question, basically. It's like, you know, people are trying to keep up with the Joneses and trying to pretend or act as though they are something that they're not by wearing something from head to toe, which it's unbelievable. If I see, I love Gucci. It's one of my favorite designers. But to see Gucci from the nails to the hair, to the hat, to the gloves,
right,
the pants, to the boots, to the jacket. Like, oh, is that Gucci that you're wearing? I mean,
yeah,
why does
I mean,
it get ridiculous?
Some people wear it because they really just obsess over it and they appreciate the brand. Others wear it to create an image.
And
right, interesting, I think now people are kind of split into two camps. We have people who are getting the high-end items and trying to cover up maybe what they don't have financially or the lifestyle that they wish they had that they don't have. And it's kind of like putting on a costume and it's not real. And then there are others where, you know, we take pride in finding the deal. We take pride in buying our outfits from Target and H&M and Forever 21 and
right,
being frugal. So you can see it can go either way, how we manage just financial difficulty, especially with this economy. You know, people are either kind of covering up with the labels, or they're really kind of using their frugality as a badge of honor, that they're able to come up with these great outfits using vintage, or, you know, getting the, you know, a lot of high-end designers now are going to the lower-end stores like Target and
yeah,
promoting collections there. And the reason being is that the money for many designers is no longer with the couture houses because people can't afford it. Now the money is really with these small, what are called prestige for the masses, these prestige items that are very inexpensive that any of us can really buy and access. And that's really where the designers are able to stay afloat financially. But we use it as kind of a badge of honor that we can have a piece of this designer, and we're not breaking the bank by doing it.
Right. Now, I prefaced the show earlier, and I said clothes and the job and office parties or whatever. So when do you tell someone, you know, excuse me. I mean, you have another chapter in here, and I'm going to read from it. It says, the office do's and don'ts, the do's and don'ts of office wear. And you have quality. Now, one thing, I'm just going to highlight a couple of things you have. Don't wear clothes with holes in them. I mean, you know, you kind of would think that people wouldn't, but you're exactly right, because they do. And I see it all the time. Yeah. How do you tell someone, you know, it used to be this little funny joke. If you see, if you saw a guy and his zipper was down, you go, ooh, XYZ. I mean,
right.
How do you tell someone, you have a hole in your, you know, or just like, you have a hole in your shirt. Did you know that? And what if they say, yeah, I did know. I knew.
Well, you know, it's difficult. It depends on the workplace and your relationship with the person.
Right.
I think that it's often the kind of the higher-up's responsibility to maintain really the brand of a company. And that might include making a commentary about an outfit. If the person isn't doing the job within the kind of parameters of what the company needs, it's no different than if a person's wearing an outfit that doesn't speak to the company, what the company's trying to promote, that person has a right to say, hey, listen, you know, the whole thing, you can't do that here.
Right.
So usually I like to kind of have the higher-ups manage that. You got to be careful with that. But, you know, if you do feel comfortable with someone and you feel like, you know, maybe they truly don't know, obviously tell them. But rather than pointing out what they are wearing, sometimes it's nice to suggest something that might look great on them. So rather than being like, wow, your, you know, ripped up jeans really aren't working for you today, you might say, you know, I saw these awesome dark, you know, flare-like jeans that are great, actually, that are office appropriate, that you could totally wear on Fridays, and I thought of you, and I thought, man, you would look great in those. That would be something where you can kind of do an indirect backdoor kind of suggestion for someone, telling them what they do look great in,
yeah,
rather than the mistakes they're making.
So if I, you know, the too tight, too short, you know, I see that all the time. And it's funny because I work in an industry where I see that, and, you know, sometimes I'll feel old because – older because I see the skirt that's so short that I can't imagine anyone doing it in a workplace, because I am old school, and I remember when we had everything fitted and everybody looked great and coiffed and everything. But when I see that now, and it's so tight, and you see everything, nothing to the imagination,
right?
I gotta say something.
Well, I think when your outfit hinders you from physically being able to do your job, i.e. bending over, things like that, that's an issue at the workplace. The second thing is, does it distract from what you're at your job? So if you are wearing something that is exposing everything, the client is not going to listen to what you're saying. They're going to be busy looking at what is exposed. And this goes
right
for both males and females. So that's number two. And the third thing is, are you in line with the brand of the company? Are other people wearing things hanging out? If they're not, you're not in line with the brand, and therefore you're not promoting the brand and you're not doing your best job. So those kind of three components I look at in the workplace. Are these things working? But, you know, it's difficult because what is appropriate and what is not standardized. It's relative. So, you know, everybody has a different idea of what is okay and what is not okay for the workplace. And so often workplaces have to have a very clear kind of bulleted format of what is okay and what is not, down to like the measurement of the skirt and things like that. But again, even with that, it's a lot of gray area. There's a lot of room for interpretation.
Yeah, so in another question, age-appropriate dressing. What is age appropriate? I mean, is it a mind thing, what you think your age is, and I'll address according to what I think I should look like? I could be 76 years old and I can come in with some shiny spandex, and I think it looks good on me because I still have the legs of a 30-year-old. But I'm 70 years old and I look crazy.
I'm working in like the psychology of dress, so I can answer this in a fashion way, which is going to be different than the way I work, which is looking at the psychology of dress.
Right.
When I'm looking at the psychology of dress, I'm looking at it from a health perspective.
Okay.
Again, if you are wearing some crazy outfit that would fashion-wise be considered totally age inappropriate, but you've chosen this because you think you look great, you feel wonderful, and you're just celebrating what you look like, go right ahead. You may have a better fashion choice, but I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to let you do your thing and be happy. But, you know, again, I always look at what is motivating the choice. Is it that you're resisting your age? Is it that you're playing into the whole silly Western idea that when you age, you've lost currency and sexuality and things like that, and now you've got to work against it by dressing like an 18-year-old? So I look at the reasons for why a person might dress in what we would think is fashion, you know, age inappropriate or body inappropriate. And then if I feel like those choices are made in health, then, you know, I might suggest some other options, but I'm not going to get into it as much as if this person is really doing it to push against something that they are dissatisfied with. That's a whole different ballgame.
Oh, my. So, you know, if you had to sum up everything, what are some of the reasons why we buy clothes? This, you know, your best five.
Why do we buy? I think we buy, many people buy because it's a creative outlet.
Yeah.
We buy because we like to distract. We buy because we like the thrill of the conquest of the buying. We buy because we might feel like we always need to be on trend, and we never feel like we are because of the treadmill of fast fashion. We buy to either feel better, to kind of increase what is already good, to decrease what is negative. We buy to create an illusion. I mean, there's so many reasons why we buy.
Do we ever buy because we need it?
Absolutely, of course. Sometimes we buy just because we really do need something. But again, needs and wants.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very relative term. Different for everyone.
I hear a lot of guys say that. They'll say, oh, I know what I need. I don't need this company. I just go in and get it and come back out. And I'm like, are you out of your mind? You have to look through the racks. You have to see what's there. You have to see what's on sale. Nope, don't have time. Go in there, get it out. I'm done.
Yeah, some people can do that. They kind of, they don't need shopping for anything else than just getting what they need. And that's, and it's not their thing. And they can go in and they have a very specific idea. They make it like a task, like going to the grocery store. They get their item and they get out of there. But for many of us, it's really a creative, fun process. And, you know, it can turn into something that's not, but usually that's how it starts, that we find joy and pleasure in doing the shopping.
Right.
And then it depends on, you know, what is motivating it after that. But often it's coming from a positive place when we start shopping.
Can we break a shopping addiction?
Can you break it? Yes, absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah, like you can with any addiction. So as a psychologist, I work with people with addictions, primarily alcohol and drug use. And even with that, yes, you can. And in the shopping, you can work with people, yes. You have to really look at the triggers for the process, what it's doing for you. So even though your shopping may be causing problems, it's doing something. Something is reinforcing the behavior. You have to figure out what you're getting from it that's working. And then you have to look at the triggers, and then you have to look at how it's working against you, and then you have to replace it with other things. So the biggest thing with the addictions is there's an anxiety that builds up prior to the purchase. And when you purchase, you are no longer allowing yourself to feel the anxiety. So in essence, you're avoiding whatever it is that's making you anxious. When you're working with addictions or any type of kind of behavior like that, impulsive behavior, you let the person also clinically, when I'm working with patients, you let the patient experience the anxiety without being able to avoid it. And that's how you break the addiction.
And is it a good idea? I think you had mentioned this earlier, that, you know, you want to find out what's triggering you to do it or at that very moment. Should you jot that down? Should you journal that? Like, this is, you know, you feel like shopping. This is why I feel like shopping, because, you know, so-and-so just happened, or I just got a raise, or, you know, whatever.
Absolutely, because when you're working in the future, you're often going to see patterns of triggers. And again, this is whether you're working with a population like with the Inside Out, my shopping population, or if I'm working with a really severe clinical population as a psychologist when I work with patients. And the triggers, everyone's trigger is different, and usually they're patterns of triggers. And once you can figure out what they are, you can figure out positive behaviors that will help those feelings rather than the unhealthy ones, which might be drinking or using or shopping. So, yeah, the triggers are going to be very important, because not only are you going to be able to deal with them and kind of face them head on and do something with the trigger rather than the shopping, you also are going to know for the future when you might relapse. So, finding those triggers are important, because you want to do something with whatever emotion is going on rather than avoiding it by shopping.
Right. Dr. Jennifer Baumgardner, who wrote the book, You Are What You Wear, What Your Clothes Reveal About You. Thank you, Doctor, for being on the Beauty Files today. This is really exciting, and, you know, I think most of my audience always know I say this. A lot of this stuff was a little personal analysis going on here, but you kind of answered a lot of questions for me as well, because most of these questions was probably related to me. So thank you so much for giving me a analysis on the whole aspect of clothes, what our clothes reveal about us. And this is a wonderful book. If you haven't gotten it, I read it thoroughly, the whole thing through. I love it. What you are, what you wear, what your clothes reveal about you, by Dr. Jennifer Baumgardner. Pick it up today. It's a wonderful book. Thank you so much for being on the files. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And if your listeners want to learn more, I also have a blog on Psychology Today called The Psychology of Dress, and I talk about kind of the new and upcoming information and how it relates to the psychology of shopping, assembling, and organizing. So.
Oh, that's it. Say that now. Yeah. Repeat that again so we can get that.
You go on psychologytoday.com, and then you just type in either my last name, Baumgartner, or The Psychology of Dress. It's my blog on Psychology Today, and I write about all things psychology of dress related and kind of some current events. So.
Oh, that's fabulous. Thank you so much, Doctor. And
well,
on the other side, we're going to be with Caro Allen on the other side. We're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of office party wear, what you should and should not be allowed to wear at an office party. We'll be right back on the other side. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the files. We are joined by Caro Allen. Some of you have requested and asked about her, so I'm bringing her back so she can give us some do's and don'ts on the clothes and the office party. Caro Allen, in case you don't know, she is a style ambassador for Bazaar magazine. And, last time we had Caro on the show, she broke down a lot of things for us. So without further ado, we're going to go back to her. Caro, what's going on with the office party and the clothes? I mean, I went to a party the other day, and, Dr. Baumgartner was, saying, there's, a good way and a bad way, tell someone, they look crazy or whatever. When do you not look in a mirror before you leave the house and realize that what you're wearing may not be so great at an office party setting?
Well, I think people have the same problem they have for parties they have just for everyday dressing. I mean, in general, I don't think that people really look at themselves almost as a brand. You're your own brand. And
right.
Wherever you go, you represent yourself. But you not only represent you, you represent your company, your family, your, you know, whatever it is that you're doing or whatever that you're attached to. So you kind of have to think about it like that. Like, okay, how is this representing my brand?
Right.
Especially when you're going to an office party where, you know, you don't want to show up looking like the crazy tramp from, like, you're wearing a Halloween outfit or something. And that seems to be translating over from Halloween. People are dressing sort of the same way. It's the one night that, you know, women can get away with looking like a tramp and just say it because it's Halloween. But now
right.
it's transferring over to Christmas, too, sort of. So I don't really understand that mindset. But I think people just don't think about it in those terms that, you know, it's not just a party. And this isn't a free pass to wear whatever I want and just say because it was a holiday party.
Yeah, because I'm thinking that, you know, that's great that you think that, you know, you look fabulous or whatever, but you have to answer to your bosses or to your coworkers when the lights come on or when you leave. And I never could understand when I saw it, and I will, you know, throw this out there, but I went to a holiday party recently, and this lady, you know, she was great looking or whatever, but she had on something that was see-through that every guy in the room, you know, was I jealous? Okay, I was only jealous of the fact that she had this great body and you could see it and that mine didn't look that great either. I was jealous of that. But what I was mad about, or I guess annoyed, was that she was standing in like a lighted part of the room that was well lit, and you could see straight through it. And she knew it. Butt naked underneath.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's where the magic begins. Butt naked
all the way. The show.
Yeah. And you know, so you're looking around and you're making sure that oh, that's why they're over there talking. So she had this crowd around her of men just talking to her, chatting it up, bringing her drinks. She gets a little tipsy. She drinks a little bit more than she was.
Right.
You know, now I don't know what happens the day after because it was on a weekday. So I don't know what happened the day after. But how do you come
right.
from, how do you get from that?
You know, I don't really know, because then you kind of get the reputation of being the office, you know, whatever you
yeah,
want to call
yeah.
it, whatever colorful word you want to use, and
right.
then what, you know, and if that's what your aim is, well, hey, I guess knock yourself out, but, you know, I wouldn't think if you're somebody who plans to be there for a while and you're thinking about upward mobility that you want that kind of thing going on, because then all the women are going to be annoyed with you and all the men are going to be trying to sleep with you. So it's, either
yeah.
way, it's not a great proposition.
yeah. I mean, because some parties you can go right from work and you go to the party, whatever. I guess where others you can probably go home and change. But when do you or I or someone just tap the person on the shoulder and go, I think you may need a bra. Or, I think you forgot your undergarments. You may want to go back and change.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fine line. I mean, I don't know. It depends, I guess, on how well you know the person and how they're going to take that. But
right.
some people just may not. That might have been their point. You know, it's hard to say. They may have wanted to have that kind of impression being made. I don't know.
What would you advise someone going to an office party? Like, what would you tell, you know, if you had, like, a client came to you and they said, Kara, you know, I'm going to this fab party, you know, blah, 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 throwing it, and I want to look fabulous, but I don't want to look like a tramp. What would, and by the way, I'm going to give you a good one. I'm a size 18.
Oh.
Yeah. And the reason why I say that, because a lot of people that are that size still, and you know, God bless them. You got it. You want to wear shiny spandex. You got it. Go for it. If you can do it, if that's what, in your mind. So
we'll
throw that in there. She's normally
wearing. I don't even know. I don't even know if it's about size. I think it's just about, because no matter what size you are, you should be able to put on something that fits you well, that accentuates your femininity, but doesn't scream your sexuality. Any
right.
woman should be able to do that no matter what her size is.
Right.
So it's just a matter of finding that garment. I mean, I always love a wrap dress because it pretty much covers everything. There's, you know, most wrap dresses aren't made to be really short. They're usually at least knee length or longer. And with the way the front of the dress is, it's adjustable with the wrap. So, mm-hmm. you know, all of your top-offs don't have to be hanging out. And it fits you, but it's not overly sexual.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's a nice, especially if you get it in a color that maybe a purple or a red, it's kind of festive for the holidays, and it attracts attention, but it doesn't, you know, give the kind of attention that you don't want. I mean, you get attention for being stylish, not,
right.
you know, hey, she might be hanging out back in the, by the water cooler and giving extra favors, you know, you don't want that kind of attention.
So should we just be beware of sheer fabrics, or should we know how to wear sheer fabrics?
Yeah, I mean, chiffon is a fine line. It really, I don't know that people really know how to wear chiffon well. I mean, if it's on your sleeve, that's great.
Yeah.
But if it's anywhere on the body, I mean, that's kind of, unless it's like little panels, little small teeny panels, like not cutouts, but, you know, just maybe like around your waist area, because I've seen some dresses that are cute like that, and it looks like it's kind of a cutout, but it's sheer over
right.
there, you know, the fabric is cut out on the inside, but then they're sheer. That's not so bad, but even then, you know, do you really want to wear stuff like that to your office party?
Right.
I mean, I wore to my broker's office a black dress that was very, it's long, it's kind of asymmetrical in the hem, but it had sheer, like, chiffon sleeves, but they were really long. So
right.
it was sort of vampish. It almost looked like Witches of Eastwick, kind of, in that sense. But I was covered. You know, I wasn't, everything wasn't hanging out all over the place, and I
right.
had some fishnets underneath. So, you know, the hem was a little, could get a little high on one side, but I would just, you know, make sure that it was pulled down properly and it wasn't exposing too much. But you just, you don't need to see all that. And it was at somebody's private home. You know, we're not in
right.
a club somewhere. It's just too much. I think people just end up doing too much. So,
yeah, because I was going
to ask you,
should we even avoid super short hemlines? Because you were saying something about your hemline or part of it was shorter. But what about the super short?
I mean,
what about the super
know,
short?
I don't think that has a place at an office party, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, unless it's a kind of dress that has, or skirt that has, you're wearing leggings underneath it or something, and say the
yeah.
leggings are a dark color that doesn't have a pattern and you can't see through them, you know, an opaque kind of thing, then that's something different. But if you're wearing like the super short thing with the thigh high boots, you might want to reconsider that.
Oh,
I don't think
God.
That has any place.
I
you know,
that.
And some people just don't know better. They oh, this looks great, blah, blah, blah. The stupid salesperson told me, you know, whatever. And it's like, really? She was just trying to take your money.
I saw that outfit. I saw the super short skirt with the thigh highs. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah,
yeah
no. It just has no place in an office party. Now, if you're going to a club and you want to do the most, then fine, knock yourself out. But, you know, whatever. If you're at the office, I just think it's just not appropriate. Because you're still
what?
At the office, really, when you're at
right.
the party. It's just a holiday party.
And
you
I'm so glad you just said that. That is such an important part. You are still at the office. Because if you're not, you wouldn't be partying with your office associates.
Right.
You're still at the
right.
office. You're just not at your computer. You're at the bar.
Right. You're not, you know, office hours, but you are with your coworkers.
Exactly.
And probably your coworkers' family. You don't even know. Not like children could be there. I don't
yeah.
know what kind of, you know, depends on office bar. So you still want to be appropriate and not over the top. It's nice to be a little more dressy. Clearly, you could have something with maybe some sequins or sparkles on it or something, but not, you know, looking like you're naked and you're trying to show all your goods. It's just, you just don't do that. It's
and
not an excuse to do it, wear what you want.
I guess our last question or our last challenge, the low-cut top. Now, how low should it be where the girls are saying, hi, sailor? I mean, when does it get too low? Hi, sailor.
I have a thing about too low cleavage that basically it'll almost look like a butt crack.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know what I mean?
There was someone that's very famous. I will not say her name because I love her to death. I love her music. But she had on something that was so low, it looked like an infant baby was, the backside of an infant baby was on her chest.
Yeah, I mean, it's really?
Yeah. I was looking for a diaper. I mean, it was just insane.
It's too much. I mean, you know, you don't have to do all of that. And it's just not necessary. I understand maybe if you've got new boobs, you maybe want to show them off. But the office party's not the time to be doing all of that, so maybe not.
Yeah, because I'm thinking that if you bend over, you know, when does another part of that the girl's her party mate show, you know, over that bend over? I mean, when does that come out?
I mean,
that's happened too.
It's a wardrobe malfunction waiting to happen.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. Malfunction. Yeah, when is that another Janet Jackson comes out? I mean, you know, when is, you know.
Yeah, I don't, you know, really, you don't have to do all that to show that you're sexy. There's just not, you know, there's a fine line there. And most of my things I try, if they don't come like that, then I usually will have my tailor put in some snaps or something in the front where it's a little too low, or, you know, because I just don't want to show all of that. I just don't think that that's necessary and appropriate. I mean, once in a while, maybe, I had one dress that kind of did that, but it was still tasteful. It wasn't looking like, you know, I was taking orders on the side about where I was going to be later, you know. I mean, it just wasn't, so... You got to be careful with that stuff because it lends itself to people thinking that you're a certain type of person when you're not. Or, I mean, unless you want to be, I don't know. But if you don't want that, then I would suggest you just don't do that.
I'll get her drunk enough on this champagne. Well, I'll just let her know, you know, who is the boss in this party.
Yeah, you don't even want to go there. I mean, it's just a mess. You don't want to go there.
Any advice, Carol, on how we should dress at an office party? Top five?
I would say wear something that's very pretty and festive. So anything that has any bright colors, anything you can wear a nice little cute jacket with it, you know, maybe a sleeveless dress that's a sheath with maybe a little jacket that's really cute, like a bolero jacket. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of holiday outfits kind of like that. You can wear boots, but I would leave the thigh highs out. Maybe don't go there with that. That just has a very suggestive connotation that you don't want to be bringing up in that environment.
Right. Hey, guy. Hey, boy, I need a drink over here.
Yeah, no, I just don't think that's necessary. You don't want to go there. So, and then, you know, pattern types are nice, but when you're wearing something patterned, you usually should wear it with a dress color that's solid so that it doesn't give too much distraction or just too much going on. It's, you know, usually black is good with a color pattern if you want to do something like that, or just color tights in general, you know, like a black dress with pink tights or blue tights or something like that. It's pretty, you know, that's another way to show some color if you didn't have a dress that was colorful.
Right.
Don't have your heels too high because you know, if you do drink a little bit, you don't want to be trying out new shoes that are too high and you're, you know, having some problems walking. And you really shouldn't have more than two drinks, maybe three anyway. You shouldn't be doing too much at the office party because you don't want people talking about you the next day.
You couldn't walk up the steps or down the steps. You couldn't walk when you were sober.
Right. Let alone that now you've had a little too much champagne, you can't walk at all. So that's not
right. And lastly, you know, I'm going to throw that out there, velvet. Velvet, I love velvet. Velvet has its place in certain people, on certain people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ooh, but, I mean, my God, velvet. Oh, wow.
Well, you only want to wear one piece at a time. I've seen some people that have a whole outfit that's out of velvet. I mean, I had a really cute kind of cute jacket that was velvet, and I wore it with a black skirt that was kind of long. But, it was a plain kind of fabric, and the top was more like chiffon-y or something like that. So I played with the patterns and the textures, but just one bit of velvet is not for one outfit. It's kind of like wearing head-to-toe leopard print. You know, you don't only need one piece. It's just too much
right.
to do all of it in that same. So.
Yeah, I saw that whole velvet outfit. I saw a blue velvet outfit. Double breasted.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, not double. Let me take it back. A vest, a jacket, and pants. I just thought I had died and went to the land of Boogie Nights. I didn't know what was going on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he thought he looked great. Yeah.
It was a guy? That's even worse.
It was a guy. Yes, it was. Kyra Island, our style ambassador, thank you so much for being on the files today to break it all down. I guess we're running out of time because I was going to ask you about something else equally ridiculous that I saw. I just remember office party attire, and I just had to get it out. So I thank you for addressing that and listening, and my audience listening to me talk about the way people are dressing lately. We won't be seeing you guys, we will not be on air until next year. So since we will not be talking with you, I hope everyone has a happy holiday, a safe and wonderful new year, and hopefully you will continue to listen to the Beauty Files in 2013, because we really, really appreciate our audience, and we thank you so much. Thank you for listening to the Beauty Files. Stay with us next year. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.